The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 887. It's the 2nd of October 2017. On the podcast today, I have Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Fairfax Group, that's FFX ticker, and Ian discusses their interim results and improving outlook. Also on the podcast, Miles Pelham, chairman of Obtala, OBT, covers several issues including their acquisition, boardroom changes and their interim results. Plus, David Fraser, Chief Executive Officer of Great Western Mining Corporation, GWMO, talks about their busy drill program over the next 6 months. And I have Malky, as it's a Monday, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about President Energy, Rockrose Energy, Amarisa Resources, Victoria Oil and Gas, and Hurricane Energy. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Fairfax Group. That's FFX ticker. Ian, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, you've recently released your interim results. I don't know why I'm telling you this. You know this. And as I'm looking at it, they look quite good. We'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, Ian, for people new to the podcast or not heard of the company there, explain or summarize what you do.
Well, actually, it's interesting you ask, because what we do is changing somewhat. So we started life as providing online ability to do foreign exchange transactions all the way through cash in the post, banknotes, prepaid cards, travel money, wiring money abroad, all the whole gamut in one clever little application. And we've recently acquired a company that will allow us to move into providing bank accounts as well. So we're moving from being a foreign exchange dominated business to being more of an e-banking and payments business.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I've got to congratulate you on your marketing, or I don't know how you've done it, because in the mornings I do a podcast entitled Five Things You Need to Know Today, and it's a 1 minute sort of roundabout summary, 5 points about macro issues. And a couple of times I've noticed your company being quoted by the BBC when it comes to sort of currency exchange rates and all this stuff, and people being ripped off and surveys. So you're doing very well on that side, aren't you?
Yeah, we do. Do you know, we've made a conscious effort on our PR side to concentrate on not just boring stories about, even though it does cost more at airports, but, trotting out the same stuff, but trying to be a spokesperson for wider issues. It could be travel related. So, for instance, we surfaced the story that many people may have followed about that guy who took his daughter out of school during term time in the Isle of Wight. They took him to court. So, we found that story and surfaced it, gave it to the BBC, who ran with it. Mm-hmm. So they do call us up when there's anything that might have a sort of pound and travel money type impact. So it's taken a while to get to that position, but we're kind of proud of it.
Yeah, and, the thing is, if you are a trusted source by the BBC, then you are a trusted source, aren't you, full stop, because they won't use, or, they've got a lot of people, a lot of staff there to check and double check, whether your stuff is right or accurate. And
indeed. Yeah. And we also, we do stuff with ITN now and Sky, so once you get to be, if something happens, they add an extra lane to the M25, then they generally have the AA sitting on the sofa, don't they?
Yeah.
We'd like to be in the position where if something happens to do with, how much your pound buys you abroad, that we're the people sitting on the sofa.
Well, I've got to say, looking at your share price and the AA share price, it won't be long before you take them over, I think. You can do that.
Yeah.
Yours is going up, theirs is coming down, so you'll meet in the middle somewhere. And okay, well, let's go through some of the results then. This is for the 6 months ended the 30th of June. Take us through some of the details here.
Well, the whole idea of the interims that we announced were really in two major parts. First is to describe how Fairfax itself was and is doing as a standalone business, and then to go through the acquisition that we've done, which I guess we'll cover in a minute. Mm-hmm. The first half results basically showed, despite the fact the pound was weak, we had an election and all sorts of stuff going on, didn't we? Mm-hmm. That we surged ahead. So turnover was very strong growth. And what you'll notice is that revenue as a percentage of turnover and gross profit as a percentage of revenue all were higher all the way down. So not only were we turning over more, we were extracting more out of it on higher margins, and retaining more of it through better control of the supply chain is really the theme of what happened in the first half.
Yeah, well, listen, you're obviously too modest there, but revenue up 33% to 6.1 million and gross profits increased by 37% to 4.8 million. So, yeah, it's looking very good. And is it continuing? Is it? Are you seeing still good growth here?
Yes, and you know, of course, the other thing we didn't mention in the first half was that we made a maiden first half profit. And for the eagle-eyed amongst people that want to pick through balance sheets, you can see that if we make a profit, our cash balance goes up too, in terms of the cash available to us. So it's very much a cash in, cash out. So if we make a profit, it flows straight through to free cash. July and August were also very strong, similar sort of percentages in underlying growth. And September, if anything, is looking even better than that. We've had a bit of a run-up in the pound, which hasn't hurt. So the core Fairfax business is doing very well. It's doing as the analyst forecast said it would do. So we're on track with all of that and our own expectations. So I'm a cautious guy, though. I still want to get to the end of the year, but we're very confident of doing the numbers we said we would.
Yeah, and so how is, you mentioned the card one, the acquisition there. How is that progressing?
We're absolutely delighted. I know people might think I'd say that anyway, but. First of all, which is important, on the day you get the keys and you see what's there, obviously we've done a lot of due diligence anyway, but basically what we thought we were buying is what we got. There were no surprises in the completion statements and the balance sheet, and everything was all clean. And the integration that's been going on with the team here and the team there is fantastic. It's really great to see everyone's working. We really are working as one big company with two offices, a Chester office and a London office. That's the way we're operating and attacking everything. We knew what functionality they had in terms of bank accounts for retail and corporate accounts, but they have a lot more tech there that, we're just finding out, we've got something that can do that. So the tech side of it and how fast we as a combined entity now can move in terms of product innovation and improving user experience is really exciting. So everyone's sort of bouncing around excited.
Yeah, and do you think is it going to change the business for the good? You think in a major way?
Yes, I really, really do. Logically, FX is a key part of what we do, but we want to be able to be a digital bank, providing full service bank accounts to SMEs and even to retail customers if the demand is there. And this gives us like a quantum leap forward in that regard. So what they have combined with what we have is very, very powerful.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, it seems to be going very well. And, next thing I'll be seeing you on the One Show, probably talking to next to the guy from the AA.
Maybe I've got a face made for radio, who knows.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ian, if someone's listening right now and they think this is sounding very good, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Number one, we're clearly getting a lot of stuff done. There's a lot of exciting things happening here. So the Fairfax business, the core business, is doing very, very well. We've just bought another business, and there's exciting stuff that will be coming all the way along in terms of announcements of new products, etc. But also, combined with that, we do what we say we'll do. So we have a track record of delivery. I don't think you can underestimate that. So an exciting company in an exciting space with a proven track record doesn't get much better than that.
Excellent, Ian. Listen, you've got a lot going on, like you said. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Miles Pelham, chairman of Obtala. That's OBT ticker. Miles, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, you've had several bits of news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, Miles, for people listening right now who have not heard of Obtala or are new to the podcast, can you give a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Sure. Optala Limited is an AIM-listed company, around $70 million market cap in the agricultural and forestry spaces. We've got operations in Gabon, Ivory Coast, Mozambique and Tanzania. Our main operational offices are in London and Copenhagen, with satellite offices in Hong Kong and Mauritius, so a global business. Last year, we raised around $25 million, and we've been putting that to work to get our latent assets into production. And the second half of this year really marks a significant uplift in terms of revenues and physical production. So really coming into a new being.
Yeah. And today you've conducted a $2 million raise, including subscriptions by management. You must be happy with that.
Yes. Very happy. We've obviously had some to-ing and fro-ing over the summer with the Chinese capital controls and the investment we were meant to receive there. So, look, it's nice to get this printed. Also encouraging that other management and major stakeholders have expressed a desire and invested alongside me. So, cash levels back to where we had predicted them during the summer. That leaves us able to invest wisely to increase profit.
And I noticed on Friday your share price was up off the back of your quarterly business update. So the market seemed to have liked it. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Miles.
Sure. Well, the update itself was within expectations, but I think what is always significant and why the market may have moved is that it's the first real signs of respectable revenues and a crystallisation on the promises that the board had made in terms of what we will deliver and what our ambitions were over the past 12 months. So, look, the stock reacted positively. It's returned to a level it was last month, but it's still off 20-25% on the year. But in terms of the update itself and what we can actually control, it was strong. I think 15,000 cubic meters in one quarter is well over 100 times what we had harvested last year. So, real exponential growth in terms of production output that we had predicted. The new equipment that we've invested in is really making a difference, as well as the new managers that we've hired. As well as on the agri side, the yields that we're seeing in the first harvest are really fantastic compared to what they were last year. So we expect profit to be higher than what we made last year in terms of our yields and efficiency. Just an example, I think the melons last year that we harvest had about a 70% recovery, but the first harvest this year looked like they're coming out around 94%. So that's very pleasing. The business is on track.
Yeah, and well, take us through last Thursday. I know it was a bit of a corporate shake-up in the boardroom. So what happened there? What was the rationale behind that, Miles?
Not really a shake-up of the board, more of a restructuring or a solidification of our business lines. It's been a key strategy of ours to pursue what are quite lucrative funding arrangements and partnerships for sustainable, socially responsible companies. Meaning that over the past 12 months, we had a great number of meetings with sustainable investors and government bodies, including NGOs. So we've witnessed two common themes for all these meetings, and that is one, that the investor or the funding body usually has a mandate to invest in either agriculture or forestry and not both. Which doesn't help us because we are a agricultural and forestry company. Mm-hmm. And if they did have the broad sustainable mandate to invest in both, then they usually love the agricultural side of the business, but are quite hesitant whether the harvesting of forests on Argento side of the business really fits within their mandate. Which we have long discussions about the fact that we're 100% sustainable forester, that the forest that we harvest when our licenses expire in 50 years will be handed back in exactly the same or in better shape than when we got it. But it's a grey area for these guys, and they usually err on the side of caution and don't invest. So this move was, apart from all the benefits that having its own board brings instead of management, hiring, branding and all this sort of stuff, this move was really driven to install the independence of these separate boards to allow the businesses to flourish and attract investment on their own right.
Mm-hmm. And judging by your interims, I think your investment in Woodboys or Woodbois Albion Prize is looking like a decent investment. I mean, how is it all going there, Miles?
It's going well. The interim's obviously flattered by the Woodwire acquisition, but it's not really about making paper profits. I mean, the Woodwire was made because we really saw value in the deep relationships that they've built up in and around Africa and with their Woodwires across the globe. Mm-hmm. Their knowledge and experience of the founders and management there, the supply lines which they have in place, which again take decades to build. Obviously, the assets they have, which has seen the paper profit, but ultimately, it's the platform that they've built that we bought. And with those guys on board, I believe we've got the perfect mix of their experience and our board savvy and financial know-how to really turn this into a giant of the industry. A real key focus for us is the expansion of their timber trading business. These are guys with hundreds of exclusive or semi-exclusive deals with sawmills across Africa, and they can make anywhere between 5% and 40% margins every 60 to 90 days, depending on whether they kiln dry in the stock or not. So if we manage to secure them $25 million and they can reuse this credit line every 90 days, then you really don't need to be a rocket scientist to work out the numbers. In terms of the integration, the personalities, I would say it's going incredibly well. We had an offsite in London 2 weeks ago where all the forestry members from all over the globe came. We discussed the business itself, how we integrate the management, went through every single different expansion growth projects in terms of how much capital it was used, how much investment is needed, what's the risk of it, what's the return of it, obviously. And picked our priorities. You'll see from the announcement last Thursday that we appointed the Woodwire management to the most senior positions in our forestry division. So we really have confidence in them to drive the business forward. And there's another meeting actually happening right now as we speak in Copenhagen. So a lot of the management over there. So overall, very happy with how it's gone. I think it's transformational for our business.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're keeping busy, and it looks like it's progressing on all fronts there. So if someone's listening right now, Miles, and they like the sound of this but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Sure. Well, Optile's been listed for 10 years now, and it's been many things to many people, but I would say that the company's never been in a better position with substantial revenue and production growth coming in this second half. So the proof will be in the pudding. I think that, like I said before, we really are a different company now. The second point is that the company has, under my leadership, met its deliverable and sits within the enviable sectors of agriculture and timber. And yet the stock is off 20-25% this year, and sits 70% off its all-time high. So if you were looking for an entry point, I would say for any chartist, that's attractive. Thirdly, and most importantly, is that you're following a sustainable and socially responsible company. If you care about tomorrow's generation, then certainly you should consider us and certainly follow us.
Excellent, Miles. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
That's great. Thanks so much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Fraser, Chief Executive Officer of Great Western Mining Corporation. That's GWMO, ticker. David, thanks for joining me again.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Justin.
Okay, well, before we get to any news, I know you released your interims end of last week. Before we get into that and some of the detail of what's coming up, could you give us a brief summary for people not aware of Great Western Mining as to what the company's all about, please?
Yes, of course, Justin. So Great Western Mining, we are an Irish PLC. We're quoted in London on the alternative investment market and in Dublin on the enterprise securities market. We're a copper play, and our main operations are in Nevada, USA, where we have a 73 square kilometre claim area with multiple targets. Our most advanced target, the M2 prospect, we currently have a JORC compliant mineral resource of 17 million tonnes of 0.52% copper.
Excellent stuff. So, like I said, end of last year, end of last week, I should say, time's flying by. Reached your half yearly report. And I understand you've got a busy drill program coming up between now and the next few months, David. Is that right?
Yes, we do indeed. It's, as you say, we had it was a very good period for us in the half year. We raised some money in the summer. We raised 2.6 million pounds of money prior to our costs. And what that will allow us to do is push ahead with quite an active drill program this autumn and early next year. So this autumn we have a phase three drilling program on M2. And the aim of that is to basically fill in a little gap that exists between the two sort of discrete ore bodies which form our JORC resource. So we're hoping that that will lead to a further increase in the resource there. And then the second program is on the M4 prospect. Now, M4 is about 5 kilometres from due south from M2, and that M4, we have widespread copper oxide mineralization. We've seen it from surface sampling and trenching there. And there's a big IP anomaly, which we think could well be a copper porphyry. So the aim of the drilling this autumn is to a few deep holes to try and find that porphyry and to find the depth of the copper oxide mineralization. And, you know, the interesting thing from our perspective is this is some sort of system which we don't fully understand how the mineralization has been created, but what we do know is that the surface mineralization from the most southerly copper-bearing drill hole in M2 continues 800 meters to the south. So if the two M4 and M2 are connected, that could be a very significant development, because we believe that this is potentially a system-wide and it's sort of potentially a copper district that we're looking at here. So the other drilling that we're looking to complete is probably now early spring in 2018, where we will do some discovery drilling on our Sharptooth exploration target. So quite an active period going forward with three distinct drill programs.
Yeah, and so if I to map out the next sort of six, I mean, you've sort of mapped out the next sort of, I suppose, 6 months. So after that, what's the plan going forward here, David?
Well, we look into, you know, what we have at the moment is we're trying to sort of demonstrate the what we think is, as I said before, a copper district, because on the other side of the Hunting Valley, we have the M1 prospect, which is another good copper target as far as we can see. You know, the surface mineralization is very widespread. You can stand on M1 and you can see 300 meters of copper shows across by 300 meters down. And certainly we think that, and our independent geologists who've seen this think that M1 is just as good a prospect as M2. So what we're trying to do is understand, you know, the source of all this mineralization and a plan to move forward and commercialize this as soon as possible. So really what we'd like to do, the M2 area is an open pit copper oxide resource, which is suitable for heap leach, solvent extraction. So a very cheap, easy sort of process. And so, if you like, the medium-term target is to get to a sort of a commercial level of copper here and copper production here to sort of fund the exploration in the rest of the district. So we currently have 17 million tonnes of copper. So, you know, the target is to get that up to, say, 40 to 50 million tonnes of 0.5% copper. Then we have an interesting commercial opportunity.
Yeah. And this production, hopefully, I mean, obviously, there's no hard and fast time or date, but how long do you think it will take till you, say, start commercial production there?
Well, We're still at the early stages of this. We're still at an exploration, exploration level. We're sort of proving up our resources. We do things to a JORC standard. So there's further infill drilling to sort of increase the sort of level of confidence, and then feasibility studies. All of this before commercial, fully commercial production. But this is something I think we can move forward very quickly now in the next couple of years.
Excellent stuff. And I suppose copper, very bright future at the moment, isn't it? With all governments banning sort of, petrol, diesel engines at certain points in the future for, EVs. It's quite a bright future, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, copper is, without a doubt, I think world demand for copper is certainly forecast to increase dramatically. The world is urbanising very quickly. Copper is a green tech commodity. For instance, there's four times as much copper in an electric car as there is in a petrol car. You need copper for power transmission, from solar, from wind, from everything. And in terms of where copper is at the moment, there's been very few large scale copper mines come on, or discoveries even, in the last 4 or 5 years. So I think we're in a very good position, sort of being involved in copper at this time in the cycle.
Excellent. Well, David, if someone's listening right now and likes the sound of this and where you're situated, but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, can you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yes, I think I can. The first thing I would say is we're in Nevada. So we're in the United States of America, so it's a stable political system, an established legal infrastructure. Maybe some people might disagree with Mr. Trump in charge at the moment how stable it is, but I think from our perspective, it's a first world situation, it's a first world economy. So we don't think we're likely to experience the sort of resource nationalism that some other companies, such as Acacia Mining in Tanzania and Freeport-McMoRan in Indonesia. We don't believe that's necessarily a risk that we need to worry about. And the second reason, I think we just discussed it there, the asset itself, we're a copper play, and it's a clean tech commodity. There is forecast to be a shortage of copper by 2020. These things sort of come and go, but as I mentioned before, copper demand is increasing and unlikely to decrease in the very short term as we move into a more clean tech sort of energy sort of environment and electric cars and so forth. So, and from our perspective, we think we have a potentially very, very large copper prospect where it's a sort of district-wide a potential here and in a district where we have all the best property. And then finally, I would say it's a sort of time and sort of risk-reward type of thing. If you look at our current situation, we have a JORC resource of 17 million tonnes of 0.5% copper, so that's 89,000 tonnes of contained copper. So at the current spot rate, that's just over $550 million of copper in the ground. Our market cap in dollars at the moment is about $9.25 million. So you can see our market cap only represents about 1.6% of the copper in the ground. We have cash for a drilling program, which we think will increase not only the resource, but the potential of the opportunity as well. So from a timing perspective, we think it's a sort of a good risk-reward. And I think that would be my three main things to say.
Excellent, David. Good work. And like I said, you've got a busy drill program about to happen, so hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much for that, and speak soon.
Okay, thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority. It's Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks, Justin. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad to see the sun is starting to come out today, which is quite nice. It's October, which is always nice. We're heading into the winter, but I like a nice crisp morning. Can't beat it.
No, it looks lovely out there, must admit.
Yeah, yeah, cool. What are we chatting about today, Marky?
Well, I'm going to chat about, I think, four stocks today, two of which I have mentioned before occasionally, but not that much, and then just a couple of confirmations of previously positive stories, which is good. So I'm going to talk about President Energy and then Rock Rose, which I'm not sure I've mentioned much before, and then Amerisur, which have had another update today, and Victoria Oil and Gas.
Okay, well, so President Energy, what's happening there? Okay.
Well, President Energy is Argentina. One guy called Peter Levine. Mm-hmm. They've had a mixed year or two in the past. They had a bit of a problem on one of their wells, and fun enough they are continuing to protest about that one, which is fair enough. But effectively, the plan has been to increase production in Argentina initially by working over. They've got a lot of acreage and therefore a lot of wells to work over. So they're increasing production by working over, and then also through acquisition. And so most recently, they've made a fantastic acquisition, which significantly increases their potential in one of the best postcodes in Argentina. Mm-hmm. You'll know that South America in general and Argentina specifically is the subject of a lot of interest. South America has seen, I'm going to talk about Colombia with regards to Amerisur, but we've also seen Echo Exploration looking to buy acreage and assets in that neck of the woods. So President are in an excellent postcode. And Peter Levine was saying last week that the objective, and there's no reason why it shouldn't come off, is to deliver profits, good margins, cash flow, capital growth, and that will fund a dividend. Now, it's quite unusual for E&P companies to pay a dividend. And if President were able to do that, then it just confirms what I've always thought, is that it's a very overlooked stock, this one. Mm-hmm. I think the shares should be a lot higher than this. It's taken a little bit. It just seems to be, over the last year or so, off the radar. Peter Levine is absolutely determined to make up for problems they had over a year ago, and I think coming with this acquisition, which looks for first rate to me, he can have production of 2,300, 2,400 barrels a day, and that should increase. Yeah, he's got big plans for this company, and if investors haven't seen it so far, they will be absolutely delighted by what's going on at President.
Yeah, it's just trading in a range, isn't it? Between 6 pence and sort of 8.5 pence. So you'd say if it breaks above that, you know, it should be good to go. But yeah, it's been trading there for what? October last year, it's been trading in that range. So, you know, when's it going to move? That's the question.
Yeah, we try to pick out these ones. That's the reason for that, Justin. You know, we're here to try and see where one or two things are undervalued, and the market, you know, think, oh well, you know, it's all this, that. But in fact, this is definitely one for the radar screen.
Yeah, exactly. You don't see stocks trading in a range for a year. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. So you think it's got to be good to go sooner or later, you know, because it's been just trading there, go up and down for a long time, and so you just wait for it towards the bottom of the range, buy if you've done your research, then sit and wait, you know. Anyway, cool. What else, Malky, are you looking at?
I'm going to talk about Rock Rose Energy, which I don't know if you know much about.
No,
I wouldn't blame you. I wouldn't blame you if you didn't know much about it. Rock Rose is a business. It was a shell which was started by a guy called Andrew Austin, who came over from being CEO at iGas Energy, and he set up Rock Rose, as I say, raised money at, 40-odd p a little while ago in order to, as a shell, in order to buy assets. And you know, as far as Rock Rose is concerned, his idea is to do deals which would take him up to sort of 10,000 barrels a day of production, mainly UK continental shelf, Northern Europe sort of thing. He's closing his first three deals at the moment. He did a deal with Maersk, he did a deal with Sojitz and Edgerton. Very nearly did that deal on Witch Farm, where he was taking the production from Premier, who in, you know, they were able to force majeure and take it themselves, but they then sold it on. So Andrew was on the right track there. But actually, those three deals he's got already give him some decent production. And there was a really sort of big hint in the statement last week, which said that there may well be, you know, a further acquisition to come. I think that I think that that was what was giving us the idea that he might do a very substantial acquisition in the next few weeks, which would push him towards the 10,000 barrels a day that his he's reiterated as being his target. This company is fully funded at the moment. I don't think they'd need to raise any money to even to do a substantial deal in their case. Mm-hmm. I don't think many people have seen it. It came when it came back from the market, having raised money at 40-odd p, it came back at 150, trading back down to about 120-odd. But if you bear that in mind, you know, if you were an initial investor at 40, came back at, even if it was, you didn't get out, you just stayed with it at 120, with a couple more deals to come, it's most interesting. And I suspect that not many of your listeners or followers know much about it. Worth having a look at.
Yeah, yeah. So it's RRE, Rockrose Energy. Cheers, Mark. Okay, and what else are you looking at?
I'm just going to mention briefly a couple of stocks which I mentioned last week, but worthy of another mention, because we've since we talked about Amerisur, who had results last Monday, which is why I couldn't talk to you until Tuesday. I mentioned them on Tuesday, but they've had another operations update this morning, and things are looking remarkably positive at Amerisur. I won't go into all the things that I mentioned last week, but just to say that their short-term production target was 7,000 barrels a day, and they're over that now. As far as I can see, they have got short-term production, which is about 7,400 barrels a day, of which 7,000 is going through the OBA, which is their pipeline to Ecuador. It's incredibly profitable oil because, if you remember, beforehand, all the oil was being trucked hundreds of kilometres to the coast. Now it just goes, you know, some of the fields just put straight in the pipeline. The other ones are all clustered around the OBA pipeline. And so their netbacks have gone up from sort of, you know, low teens dollars a barrel to about $30 a barrel now. So incredibly profitable business. As I said last week, they've made two substantial discoveries in the last few months. One is in the Llanos Basin with ONGC, which they've announced this morning is going on long-term test, and I'm sure they'll drill another well there. The other is on Platanillo 21, which was a step out on pad 2N, and I think that'll come into production at any time soon. And they're drilling another one, Plat 25, on the same pad. So, you know, at the risk of restating what I said last week, this company is fully funded for a fantastic 16 well program over the next 18 months. And they've got, as I say, further drilling to come in the Llanos Basin. They're doing Platanillo 25, and it's got this thing called the N-Sands anomaly, which, if it came in, wouldn't just increase production, but would kick the increase in reserves would be very substantial indeed. So at the risk of repeating myself, I'm very positive on Amerisur Resources.
Marvellous AMER ticker there. Anything else, Marky?
Very briefly, again, at the risk of repeating myself, we had an announcement for Victoria Oil and Gas last week. I mentioned it on Tuesday. Since then, I've spoken to Ahmed Dick, the CEO, who is incredibly positive. The flow from the LA-107 well, not only substantially better than they expected, they're flowing 54 million scf a day of gas. But that's better than their previous 105 well. They're now sidetracking the 108 well. But the bottom line is that this is in Cameroon, their second city, but larger city called Douala. I think that, you know, looking at what they've said, they can produce 100 million scf a day and sell it to the local power generation plants, who would probably take as much as they could. Significant businesses in that area. They're all learning to take natural gas. I think the demand, they think the demand is 150 million scf a day, so they can produce flat out. They've got two potential big extra areas of supply. One is the Bomono acquisition, which they're in the process of doing, which is Boliven at the seller there, and the other is the Mutanda block, which is huge and most exciting. There's nothing but significant upside from VOG. I happen to know that they are presenting at the end of October at the Cape Town conference, which is where all the biggest and best African companies show up. So I'll have much more to report after that. But as I say, having spoken to the CEO, it looks like the only way is up on that one, fella.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just looking at Hurricane Energy's little, very short RNS, but they mentioned the FPSO is, I don't know how to pronounce that, Aoka Mizu, is the dry docks in World Dubai. I just did a Google search of this ship. It's a monster. It's quite big.
It's huge. And funnily enough, although, you know, it's going into dry dock for the adaptations it's needed, and, you know, I know you're very positive and on Hurricane, and so am I. You know, I always said that I think that the concerns about Hurricane have only been through those players who got, when the funding was done, it was done at a lower level than perhaps it should have done. But that is history. I know it creates a bit of short-term indigestion, but I really don't think that it's anything to worry about. If you've got any ability to keep these stocks for a longer term, I think you'll make bundles of money in Hurricane. The Aoka Mizu is a very, very good FPSO. You know, the CEO, Dr. Robert Trice, knows all these businesses. He's very hands-on. He knows what's going on. Yeah. He was telling me recently that he's chosen this because it's the best possible FPSO. It won't need a huge amount of work being done on it, but it's obviously got to be adapted to be an FPSO west of Shetland, where it's going to have some grotty weather, which we know about. You know, the fact that it's already in dry dock, where the same dry dock where they're doing all the substantial work on the seabed stuff, means that things are on the move, and people were worried that they're not going to see much in the way of information from Hurricane. Well, they got that one wrong, because we've had the field development plan, the FID, the final investment decision. We've had this one on the case now, and so I'm genuinely positive about how things look around there.
Yeah. Worth just googling that picture if you're interested, of course, of that ship, because it's a biggie. I don't know what I was expecting, but it's bigger than I thought. Marvellous, Malky, thanks for that, and we'll speak next week, fella.
It's a pleasure. Nice to speak to you again, Justin.
Okay, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Angus Energy, ANGS. At four, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, COPL. At three, Rehoboth Resources, RBD. At two, Frontier Resources, FRR. Having problems here with my reading. And at number one, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is Greatland Gold, GGP. Okay, our top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, UK Oil and Gas, acquisition of further interest in Petrol 143. At 4, Premier African Minerals, successful fundraising of £3.5 million placing via primary bid. At 3, Vesarion, VRS awarded share options to directors. At 2, Hurricane Energy, operational update. And number 1, most liked RNS, came from 88 Energy. That's 88E ticker, and its corporate presentation. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.